welcome to this week's Inside Education with me, Sean Delaney. You can listen to or download podcasts of all previous Inside Education programs on seandelaney.com/podcasts. On last week's program, I introduced you to retired art teacher John Brennan. John Brennan is originally from Ennis, County Clare. After his education with the Christian Brothers in Ennis, he went to St. Pat's in Dublin in 1960 to train as a primary teacher. After teaching for a year in Portlaoise, he moved to Joey's in Fairview and attended classes in the National College of Art and Design. Having qualified as an art teacher, he set out in search of a job. First, he tried St. Fintan's in Sutton, where no job was available. His next attempt was with Brother Benignus in Ardscull La Salle in Raheny. At the end of last week's programme, John was telling us about approaching Brother Benignus. With reproductions of Picasso and pictures of French artists on the school walls rather than pictures of football teams, John thought the omens looked good. So this is what happened when he spoke to Brother Benignus.
So I said, I'm qualified. Oh yes, we're looking for an art teacher, because they had no art teacher. We're looking for an art teacher. I knew, because they're only 3 years in existence. We're looking for an art teacher. And I said, would you like to see my qualification? No, he said, just start in September. So I started in September. Wonderful time. I was in a science room in the beginning, because that was the era when they thought science was the in thing. So they built 5 science rooms, I think, so they had a spare 1 or 2 left over. So I was in a science room for the first 2 or 3 years, I think. So,
and how would you describe your approach then to teaching art? Because you were, it was almost a blank slate. You could start, you didn't have a predecessor that you were following.
No, and I had no guidelines. But I read a good lot of books, on teaching art. There was a lot of books published, some guy in England, I read, and I was contributed to a book. It used to come to me every month. There was much more art in England, and I used to get ideas from that. And there was other books on teaching art and teaching all the different elements, light, shade, texture, and all that. So I'd kind of incorporate that and make it as varied as possible for them, because I realized that they wanted to be using their hands as much as possible, and I never told them this is the way I give general instructions. Now I was finding my way for the first 2 or 3 years, really, and then as you settle down and then you knew what the exams were, you kind of base it around that, you do that, but you put a bit of variety into it. And I asked Micheála Nuálán, the art inspector, to come out, because I said, I'm just finding my feet. Would you ever kind of come out and see what's happening? What am I doing? So didn't hear a word from him. So I based it on books I read, and especially what was going on in England, because the schools in England were these comprehensive schools, they had big art departments. So I'd have read a good bit about that. I'm doing drawing at the moment at Malahide, and one of my former students is there. He told me only yesterday, when he was doing the Leaving Cert, now this is for live figure drawing, in those days the people who supervised the exams were ordinary teachers of Irish, English and all that kind of stuff. So these teachers who would have no experience of art, they'd be put in charge of the supervision, and they thought it had to be all clear cut, But seemingly he only told me this now yesterday. I think told him to use grey paper, grey paper, because you can put highlights on grey paper. I think I might have some over. Grey paper kind of brings out the, you can put chalk on it, grey paper like that. So if you're doing it in pencil, and then that'll make it more three-dimensional. So a column is an image. This guy said, I was doing my Leaving Cert and I had blue paper or something, I probably told him to use it. But the fellow got all hysterics, the superintendent. And he said, get out, it is. And Colum says, but sure, this is my Leaving Cert. No, get out. Because they were given a white sheet with an iver screw there. This is what you give them. So he said that I came along, and he said, you took him aside and spoke quietly to him. And anyway, he was allowed to do his thingamajig. So that only now from yesterday, this is about 40 years ago, when it happened. Just shows you the way it turns around.
And did you find that students treated art differently than, say, what might be considered more academically serious subjects like Irish, English, maths and even science?
Well, I suppose they did, but I looked upon it as, now my idea was, I looked upon myself as a facilitator of happiness. That was my outlook. Now, but I prepared it fairly well. I prepared all the lessons fairly well, and they always had something to do. And sometimes I'd have all the place ready for them. Now, I organised the classrooms. I wouldn't have them all running around the room and going getting their own stuff, because I realised that that causes trouble. And I had kind of strict enough rules, but they got in on it after a while. No one was moving around. No one could shout out a question. If there was a question, you push, and I'd go to the one particular person and answer. So, but they got in on it. Sure, they loved it because it was secure and no one hit them or shouted at them. No other students did, you know. So it was a very calming and relaxing place. It was like an oasis.
So if you were facilitating happiness, how did you make sure that learning happened as well?
Well, I did, because they were doing it. You learn by doing it.
Would you have given them the media and, say, whether it was clay or whether it was...
supply all that.
And what kind of stimuli would you give them then to work on? Or what kind of challenges would you set for them in class?
No, this, I'm just did this myself. We'd be doing, you see these now, this is the basic thumb pots.
And little clay, a pinch pot, is it?
That's simple enough, you know. We'd do some of that, and then we'd put two together and make something else out of it. You know, I'm doing a fish now myself. Now, I did pottery courses, and I'd know what to do. Now, the pottery was a sure winner. Once they saw pottery there, you were away in a hack. Because, well, I'd have it all ready for them. I'd have the boards out, the modelling tools out, everything out. And then I might have a sample or two of what we might be doing, but they could develop it themselves. Now, that's just for pottery. Whatever I kind of organised for them, but it was up to me to make it as interesting and that they got as much opportunity of expressing themselves and doing, you know, using different materials, whether it was drawing, painting, liner cutting, calligraphy. And I'd kind of organise it, and things would be all ready for it. Don't know, of course, I'd have slides. I used a lot of slides. Give them ideas and slides.
Maybe slides of famous paintings.
Not necessarily famous paintings. Maybe of Moore Street. And you'd have, say you're doing a painting, the colour composition. It might be based on something from Frank O'Connor or something. You know, maybe two or three paragraphs. And they could come up with something based on that. But just to help them, I used to have drawings myself done, which I did, you know, drawings. These would be kind of, they'd refer to. These are references. And sometimes I used to take the pictures, slides myself. I put those, I had a screen. That was one of the first things I got, a screen, a daylight screen, I remember. So, and a slide projector. So we draw some of those, maybe someone taking over oranges or something and all that. You'd build up little small things that you'd put together then in the main composition. But I'd supply them as much as I could. Or they could go to books. They wouldn't. We had books actually there. And they go through, they might come across something that had helped them. But it was a very slow, enjoyable process. There was no such thing, we have to have it done next week. I let it develop. And then when I knew that maybe 2 or 3 weeks that was enough for that painting, we'd go on then to do maybe pottery, go on to do lino, which would take a long time. And usually you'd have a paragraph from some book or other, and they'd base it on that.
And would you have people, say, scrapping earlier attempts, and or would you insist on them working on it until they got it?
Well, I was never kind of an insister. They just love. You think this is beyond the beyond, but that's the way it was. As some of the people told me there, really, when there was reunion, just said, Mr. Brennan, you never said this is the way to do it, and this you have to do it my way or that way. You just let it happen. Actually, Colin McConnell taught me yesterday this one. He said, Colum said, I was drawing this bus. Now, this is years ago, drawing this bus. And I think I came along, is that the way a bus is, Colum? You know, probably. And he says, yeah, I think that's it. That's the way a bus is. And I said, fair enough. But it was probably not the way a bus would be. But I wouldn't influence my opinion. He described it, some kind of a roundy thing, he said, on the bus. That's possibly summed up the way. I wasn't ever forcing anyone. I provided... I suppose the ambience, that's a big word. But I did for them. Sure, they loved it.
You know, it sounds like you loved teaching as well.
And well, I loved it.
Sure. Was there anything you found difficult about it?
Well, if the classes were big now, you know, they weren't big maybe when I started over there first. You know, you'd have nearly 30, which was a lot, you know. But, you see, I was fortunate that they were doing something, you know, and that they were learning by doing. And if I organised it well and made it interesting, that would cut out any problems. Now, there was a few kind of wild guys, you know, and like in recent years there, now you had to be in control of the whole class, you know. But these people would be troublesome for everyone, you know, not necessarily. So they'd be much worse, like in other classes when they were trying to learn on more fajita or something. But sure, I got a wonderful book when I was retiring. One of the students made it. So no, I had a great time, really. And any time I meet them, you know, she'd always say, "Ah, oh, so your class was great," you know.
And you practiced art yourself.
Luckily enough, then I started cartooning. Even when I was in primary school, primary teaching, I started cartooning with the Independent. So I have 3,000. 3,000, and then with the ASTI, I started over there. Who are these magazine covers? Well, I just picked out now. I was doing the secondary teacher. So there's
the ASTI journal.
So I was doing that. I'd have an average of about 2 drawings a week. So it was just fantastic, really. I'd be teaching art all day in the middle of art activities. Come home in the evening and I'd have a cartoon or doing or illustration or two to do. So I did all the politicians, all the... Going way back to De Valera, really. I did one when De Valera died. I had a big picture of him. And every week I was being the show page, the sports page, the financial page quite a lot. And then I was in the evening press. I was in the Anish, you know, Anish, the Irish paper. I was in the Irish Catholic. all these papers. I think I listened to there. Clare People, Clare County, Garda Review, the Garda News. So I have stacks of folders.
Do you think that your ability in art, was it inherent or was it learned or acquired?
I'd say I had it from a young age. I was able to draw. And it's basically the more you draw, the better you become. That's it. And the more you draw and draw and draw. As Colin McConnell said to me yesterday, he has this, it's in Latin, something, no day without a line. That's no day without drawing. Now, he's retired from the Guards. And he draws and draws every day. He said he was always interested in art. And he was telling me when he did the leaving, I was surprised, I remember myself at the time, he was so interested in it. And he was saying he was thinking of going, and he told his parents he wanted to do art. "Oh, no, you won't do art, nothing in that, you'll join the Guards." So he joined the Guards. So he told me he finished up actually doing fingerprints, and there was some kind of drawing in that. So he was delighted together. But he's back now drawing.
I suppose what I'm wondering about is, for a parent who is concerned about their child going into art.
Yeah, well, not many went in now. In our school, very few. John Berkeley, he was the best ever, you know, he was there. So he became a fantastic, he's worldwide known as an illustrator. And Jack Kerwin, he's a landscape artist, is doing very well. Maybe I should have mentioned this because this is connected with the primary school. I came up with this idea while I was primary teacher. I might have seen it in an English paper where they used to do a drawing of a soccer player, you know, and they'd write a little bit about him. You know, some fellow has played well. So I said, why not do the primary school matches? So I went straight into the Independent, up the stairs. I had one or two things made out. I said, I have this idea to do a report on the primary school matches every week. So they said, okay, start this week. So I remember coming home and telling my wife, couldn't believe it, said I'm starting this week. So I went to the matches and... at the end of the match, I'd pick out the fellows who are fairly good and I'd get them to come over and I'd draw them. I'd draw them like in pencil on a sketchbook. And I'd usually get another one to hold my... I had a kind of a little bag, you know. They just love holding the bag. So I'd draw them, profile, and then I had these action shots. Now, I get them on the paper, but I'd put in as many names as possible. What was that now? Corran na Laoch. Le Lucan and Monkstown. So that was probably the final, I'd say. I'm not sure. But anyway, I'd put in as many. Usually they'd be from one team. And then I'd put in these guys who were good. So that was on the Herald every week for about 3 to 4 years. When the primary matches then finished up in summer, I said, I better keep my spot on the Herald. So I came up with the idea of going to the school, drawing the school that won the different cups. You know, there was a few cups. So Sing Street won it. So I went up to Sing Street and that's I drew it on the spot. So that's Sing Street. So, oh yeah, here's another one here. This is Blanchardstown, I think, is it? St. Bridget's Blanchardstown, yeah. So to keep my spot
very good, yeah.
So then, unfortunately, I didn't mind really, as it happens, someone said that involved with the primary, a photograph of the team would be better. But a follow on to that, I said, fair enough. And then say, you can just do the finals in Croke Park, which I did for 2 or 3 years. And funnily enough, there's an artist now that I got to know, Paul McCormick. And I was telling him, he said, yes, you know, he was about 10 at the time. He lived in where I lived, in Chicago. I was waiting every Tuesday to see those drawings. So this would have been the only drawing, more or less, that would appear in the paper. And especially as they were of young fellas. The way I tried to tell them, a primary school down the country, if they saw this, a drawing, they'd kind of relate to it instead of a photograph of 15 fellas looking at a camera. Anyway.
And you had the names be under the sketches.
They wrote that themselves. I went to the paper and I wrote it and I stuck that now.
Their own signature.
That was all done on a card about that size. And these are all separate pieces. And I always have this.
That's A4 size.
Yeah, a cow gum. And I cut that out, stick it on. Now, there used to be soccer magazine Shoot, I think was the name of it. Do you remember that, Shoot?
Yes, yeah.
And they used to have very good artists doing pictures of matches. And that's where I got all this business of doing the grass. That's the way to do the grass, you know, and all that.
You're retired now, John. How have you been spending your time since you retired?
As soon as I retired, even before I retired, I knew like I'd have to be doing something. Before I retired, I planned out that I'd teach watercolour classes. So I've all my lessons over there, stacks of them over there in the corner underneath the Easton's bag, you know. Again, I prepared them, if I say, fairly well, because I went to one or two art classes and I saw what would happen. A teacher would put a little photograph up on the board, something, we'll do this. But no development of step-by-step stuff, you know. So I decided to do watercolour classes. I advertised around the place, you know. I started then straight away, actually, in the September. It was a good idea. It didn't hang around. And so I had 5 groups going at one stage. I ran them for about 8 or 9 years. But then when my wife died, the bottom falls out of your life, really. And there was no one in the house, you know. Even though I kept it going for a while on a Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday.
Doing it at home here?
Yeah, I used to teach the classes, like, you know.
And how did you ensure development? Say, if someone is drawing people, how would you ensure that they're getting better over a period of time?
Well, they will get better.
What's the teacher's role in their getting better? Role,
well, you'd start off really from the basics, you know, if you're drawing a person. I would have samples of, you know, if you're drawing a person, kind of a roundy thing at the top and down like that. And then you can maybe, you draw, paint that, and then you can put the details later on over that. But it's all, I have it all, I've stacks of the lessons over there. I often wonder now, really, what do I do with all these lessons? Because I have then pictures all worked out step by step. Do you see this now in a lot of watercolour books? Step one, you see, and the colours. Step two. Now, I would have done all those. So I would have done everything that they would be doing. So I would know what would happen, more or less. But they develop it themselves. I found that people love to be doing something definite, not just wondering what I'll do or where will I go or which goes which where. But I'd be sitting around or walking around and I'd just give a few little pointers, you know. But mainly it was kind of it was kind of automatic pilot, because I had all I had the drawing down, I have cut watercolour, I have the sheets drawing with step one, I colour copied, 1, 2, 3, that was towards the end. But before that, I'd have like the headings, for instance, pictures on water, pictures on light and shade, pictures on how to do them, and samples, and then to do them and to get better and better. Now they used to be looking back at their books. Isn't it great to see the way we got on?
So would you work on people for a while, and then would you work on landscapes or anything?
Well, I work on the parts of landscapes, like water, reflections, clouds, what else, trees, all that kind of stuff. And then towards the end, this is after about 6 or 7 years, you have these pictures with all of those would be included. But then they could develop their own pictures, you know, and generate developments. But they just loved the company of others painting, and that there's something definite to do.
And is it something that anyone can do?
Oh, yeah, you can do it. If you're able to move your hand.
But if someone kind of says, you know, I couldn't draw anything, or, yeah, I'm not good at drawing.
No, well, I wouldn't mention one. I would never say anything at all to them like that. Or I'd never say, you would have got some people, I can't draw, and I was hopeless drawing in school. People can remember from their school days, the nun said, I can't draw, you know, I'm not able to draw. And that was with them until their 60s and 70s and 80s. They taught because they were told. Now, I never gave exams. I believe when you go in, you, as I said, you provide the facilities, the encouragement, and a few general guidelines. So I never gave exams. And because I remember it struck me one time, a neighbour down here, talking about her daughter went to some school and she was doing, you know, when they go in the first year to do a few things, you know, to do different subjects. So it would say her name was Mary, would say, Mary, oh, Mary, you only got 39 in art. How could anyone give a 39? How does anyone know 39? This girl probably did her very best. I never gave exams. Everyone was either very good, one or two would be excellent, you know. And usually my report was, say, name was Kevin. I hope Kevin enjoyed his time in art during the year. Very good, or whatever it is, very good. If there was excellent, now I'm a really outstanding person, I put on excellent. And never any trouble with that. Towards the end there, the careers teacher, of course, she said, we'll have to put in something here, John, you know. So I said, I'm not going to put any mark. If you want to put in, say, 90, when you see excellent, you can put into your files, but it won't be my mark. And so that's the way it was. Now, I did give marks for art history, because you had to, because art history, that was the only time.
Could students say maybe you weren't giving them enough guidance as to what grade they could expect to get in their leaving cert?
That never came into my thinking. Because I told you in the beginning, I was sick of this 7 years, scholarship after scholarship after scholarship. And I didn't think life was like that, you know. Our education shouldn't be like that.
This was your own experience with the scholarships?
Yeah, my own experience. And I didn't want to get into this circle of marks in art. How could you be given... Well, because the youngsters were doing their best. You know, they were doing their best to their ability. If you provided the encouragement and the facilities and, you know... They were doing their best.
But isn't that mostly true in other subjects too, like history, geography, Irish, English, and still people get marks?
Yeah, but I wouldn't give marks. That's me. I decided not so you can... I wouldn't give marks. So I never, from the word go, you know? No, I wouldn't give marks. So anyone that I meet afterwards, they're not worried that they didn't get 57%. They just remember the fun. And the enjoyment.
And the experience.
And the experience and that kind of stuff. You know, so I mean, they wouldn't leave the art room. I know that people think school should be marks, 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 marks. You know, when a young child is at home or that, you don't give a child marks. You know, you provide a paper or that kind of stuff. No, I was maybe, no one ever interfered with me or said anything about not giving marks. Because I just couldn't, it would stick in my craw. It's not a word, stick in my craw. I just couldn't. Because you'd see the people there doing their best every day. But anyway, it improved now before I left with this junior cert. A great idea. Because they spent the whole year doing a project.
That's the portfolio.
Yeah, well, yeah, you do it and you kind of put it into an envelope and someone comes around and marks it. The teacher's going, well, that's fair enough if they mark. But there's an improved immeasurably. Before that, you'd have this intercert. You know, you'd go into a hall, you'd be out of your art room. They went into this big hall with these desks, you know, these desks that you'd be able to write your... And sure, they were completely out of their environment, you know. So, and it was usually then these teachers of English or something who were supervisors. So they hadn't a clue. They were just handing out the sheet.
John, we're coming near the end, so I have a few general questions. Okay. Who or what inspires you?
I just have to keep going. That's what I wouldn't say inspires me. I just, because my position at the moment, I'm completely on my own. I have a daughter down in Limerick, you know, so it's not easy, but like, it doesn't. So I'm out, I'm tomorrow now, I'm going to the wheelchairs. I volunteer there in the art room. Today I'm in the art gallery. Now, I used to have a class on a Wednesday here, but then you'd have the same four people coming in, but then it kind of, the bottom falls out of your life when you lose your spouse, really. And I felt I should maybe... go out and meet more people and instead of the same four people coming in. Just people that I meet, they probably inspire me, really. Well, at this stage in my life, I want to make sure I just keep going and enjoying what I'm doing. Because, I mean, you just have to. you know, you have to do it. And I'm fortunate to have an interest in art. Maybe it lagged there for a while when you're not feeling the best, but you just, it has been a great source of enjoyment for me. And I'm very fortunate that I had it. And I'm very fortunate that I was working over there about 5 minutes from home. And I was able to be drawing here for all these over 3,000 stuff, you know.
Is there any artist or any art educator who inspires you?
Well, I never came across an art educator. There was no art educator in my day.
Or artist?
Well, I used to like Norman Rockwell. He's an illustrator. He's a famous American illustrator, you know. And I would have some of his books. And Sean O'Sullivan now is, he's dead years ago. He's a pencil artist. Sean O'Sullivan would have been, well, just to see the skill of them, like, you know, the skill. And just I admire what they were able to do. And that kind of stuff, you know.
And finally, John, for somebody who's starting out as an art teacher today, what advice would you give them?
Well, I'd say the best advice is preparation. Have everything prepared and don't kind of nitpick what you're doing. You know, just give encouragement. And I wouldn't say don't put what you think is right, force that on them. You know, well, I didn't do it anyway, and I got on, and they will be much happier campers then, you know. They will like, and they'll know they won't be given out to for something that they'd do, you know. But I suppose you'd encourage them, you know, in what way to do. But you wouldn't be, is it dogmatic is the word I should, you wouldn't be dogmatic, and this is the way to do it, and no one else. This girl now wrote this lovely thing for me, and Elizabeth Leonard, and she said, everything you said, I've learned, you know, the way the class was so relaxed, and the way you were talking about different things. I wouldn't remember it, but the way you were talking about life in general, she said, I've got a great lot from it. So that's nice to hear that.
She's a past pupil.
Oh, she is, yeah. I suppose that's the way it was. One of the teachers said, you know what, John, you have reached nirvana up in that art room. And I probably had.
Wouldn't it be just great if every teacher could have John Brennan's sense of achievement at the end of their career? Remember, you can listen to or download podcasts of previous Inside Education programmes on seandelaney.com/podcasts. You can purchase my book about teaching, Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have, on the Routledge website or from any online retailer. Thanks to this week's guest, John Brennan. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.